Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
So this is our Culture of the Kingdom series we're doing on Matthew 5, 6, and 7. And this is session 29. We've been doing this for a minute. Today is entitled Freedom from Common Distractions. And my hope today is to identify some common distractions that we may not even be thinking of as distractions, and then to give us some insights on how to carry our hearts, on ways to navigate those distractions. And first, I want to start with an analogy about how distractions work, okay? So the thought process of a NASCAR driver, all right? And we all know what he's supposed to be focused on. He's going around the track a bajillion miles an hour. He needs to have his head in the game and not be distracted. But let's just say he decides, like he puts out a new T-shirt, a red T-shirt. And it's all red and has his name on there or something, okay? And he decides he really wants to start counting how many of those red T-shirts are in the stands. And while he's going around, you know, however many hundred miles an hour, he's distracted trying to count the red T-shirts. This is dangerous. This is a total deviation from his purpose while he's still going through the motions. That we would call that inappropriate. We would say that's crazy. What kind of race car driver does that? Distractions wind us getting us off course and can even wind up, you know, causing us into a crash if we're not careful. And so what I want to do is I want to talk about distractions this morning, and I want to talk about the ones that Jesus identified in the Sermon on the Mount. And there's probably others that he's identified that maybe we've already covered in other sessions. We were just identifying them differently. But I want to cover a few points this morning. I've got maybe four distractions that I want us to look at from the Sermon on the Mount that we want to be careful that we don't wind up giving into or yielding. The smart thing for the NASCAR driver who catches himself counting red T-shirts is to stop himself and go, what am I doing? Stop counting the red T-shirts. Keep my eye on the road. Let's win the race. And that's what we want to do as well. So the thing is, the way that the enemy so craftily, is that a word? I don't know. I make words up sometimes. That he so craftily gets us off task, gets us off of our focus that we really should have, it just makes it seem so innocent. Getting us distracted from our purpose, distracted from him, and doing it in a way that it just seems so innocent that we give into it without even fighting it. But what's actually occurring when we get distracted from what the Lord has for us, from who we are, from who he is, from what he wants for us, when what actually is occurring is we are being led astray by the enemy. And I want to read that verse, 2 Corinthians 11:3. This is Paul with great pastoral care looking after the Corinthian church. He's saying, oh, Corinthians, I love you. I want for you to have your focus on Jesus. He says, but I am afraid that just as Eve was deceived by the Spirit's cunning, your minds may somehow be led astray. Led astray what? Into straight up sin? Led astray into, you know, the biggest mistakes of our lives? No, led astray from your sincere and pure devotion to Christ. The subject of distraction is about being led astray from the purposes of Jesus in our life and really from him as our focal point. And the truth is, really anything could distract us from Jesus. You could distract you from Jesus. Your spouse, your whatever. It could be the best things in your life. If we're not careful, we could allow things to distract us. But I really like the way that Paul puts it here. He makes it all about a spiritual warfare issue. He says the issue of distraction is actually an issue of you being deceived by the spirit's cunning, or by the serpent's cunning. When you're being distracted away from your pure and sincere devotion, from a focus on Jesus, when you're being distracted from that, the enemy is actually involved in the process. That's crazy. Because I just think about how many distractions we face. And Paul's going, I want to tell you that's actually part of spiritual warfare. It's part of a fight between you and the kingdom of darkness. And you do not want to be led astray by the wiles of the enemy. He says this, that your minds may somehow, when he says somehow, it's like he's leaving the open door for there could be 1,000 different ways your minds could be led astray. that your minds would be led astray somehow, one of 100 different ways, led astray from your sincere and pure devotion to Jesus. That's the purpose. That is the purpose of mankind, sincere and pure devotion, focused attention on Jesus. That is the purpose of mankind. And there are things that get in our way, and what happens is they get us off course. This is not what we want. Distractions get our attention away from what really matters. Now, what's really interesting about this is the same thing that's a distraction in one scenario is a total blessing that's causing us to draw closer to Jesus in another scenario. That's what's so tricky about it. It's we wind up praising the gift instead of the giver, the one that's giving us the thing. We wind up being totally invested in what's happening in our life instead of the Lord who's doing things in our lives. It's a subtle thing that occurs in our heart that we wind up distracted. But I just want to tell you that distraction is actually the enemy's doing, taking us away from our purpose. What's our purpose? Matthew 22, 36 through 38. This is my life verse. I can remember being very young in the Lord. Maybe having only known the Lord for a few months, and I was reading through the Bible, and I didn't know any better, so I just picked up the book and started in Genesis. So I was just Genesis, just kept going Exodus. And I got to Deuteronomy, and I can remember reading Deuteronomy chapter 6, which if you don't know that passage, it's this verse. I can remember reading Deuteronomy 6 as just like brand new in Jesus and going, this has got to be like one of the most important verses in the whole Bible. I hadn't even read 90% of the Bible yet, but I was like, what could be better than this? Like, this is it. And it turns out that's exactly right. It really is. And so I look at this verse as not my life verse. I look at this as the body of Christ's life verse. This is the point for all of us. If you want to be knowing what you're supposed to be focusing on, it's this. You want to know what you want to be understand well, it's this. Be able to teach well on, disciple your family in, impart to friends and everybody else, it's this verse. This is the point of life. Jesus is asked, what is the most important thing that God has to say to humanity? Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment. This is the most important thing that's ever come out of God's mouth. This is the most important thing. We want to make sure we understand this is the objective of life. This is the purpose. This is what we're heading towards. This is what God wants us on the road towards growing in. Distraction takes us away from the greatest commandment. Distraction isn't blatant sin. That's a whole nother category. We did like 7 or 10 sessions on that. Okay? This is different. This is just deviating a little. It's just taking our focus off of what matters. But if you're focused on the thing that matters, you're walking in your purpose. If you're focused on the thing that matters that God has assigned as the point of life, then you're actually marching towards your divine calling, the fullness of God in your life, joy, peace, fulfillment. You're walking towards that. If you get distracted from that thing that matters, you're spinning your wheels no matter what you're doing. The wheels are just spinning. You ever seen a bike up on a stand? Maybe somebody's working on the bike and the wheel's just spinning. It's not going anywhere. That thing could be pedaling 10,000 miles an hour. That wheel's just spinning. You're not going anywhere. Think about that and think about how really like painful of a thought that is, that would be the picture of our life. All this energy going nowhere. When we're distracted, we are not accomplishing the point of life. And we wind up off course. And that off course might lead you into some stupid sin, or it might just be the wheel just keeps spinning. Here's the other thing. If you're on that bike and you're not paying close attention to what's around you, the fact that you're pedaling makes you feel like you're accomplishing something. Even though that wheel is just spinning, not going anywhere. We've got to make sure, we've got to do that kind of reassessment. It's a good idea to ask yourself the question, how am I doing on the greatest commandment? Just like, write that in the, if you got a Bible that like the open cover has got a little bit of blank space on there, write the first commandment and remind yourself of it 10,000 times before you die. Every couple weeks, every month, remind yourself, just ask yourself the question, how am I doing on this? Because this is the point of life. Right now I'm really focused on this and this, and I do a little bit of that greatest commandment thing. I want to tell you, you want to readjust. We are going to have to give an account before the Lord. I don't mean this in like a, you're going to be in trouble. I mean like you're going to go, oh, I wasted my life. We're going to stand before the Lord and he's going to go, hey, you know that thing I told you was the most important thing ever? Yeah? How'd you do? Well, I gave it about 6%. I'm not thinking Jesus is going to go, you're bad. I'm thinking Jesus is going to go, all right, you good with that? Like, no, I'm not good with that. I wasted 94%. Like, I want to invest in what matters. Jesus said this is the most important thing. So the subject of distractions is super important for devoted believers. The subject of distractions is massively important because you may not wind up in some heinous sin tomorrow, but if you get distracted, the enemy has won at a significant level because the wheel's just spinning. You're investing energy. You're even thinking you're accomplishing something, but you're not on the purpose of God for your life. The number one purpose of your life is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. That's number one. All right, so now I want to talk about a few traps, okay? You could call these distractions. You could call them traps. I'm going to use the terms interchangeably. They are traps that have been set by the enemy that have been just kind of hardwired even into the human experience at this point. We're so used to seeing it in culture and in life, and we even exhort one another sometimes if we're not careful to go get trapped in something. I mean, the traps are everywhere. I just want you to think about, like, what a bummer it is for the bear, okay? The bear's out in the woods, okay? He sees a giant piece of raw meat. He is so excited. He's got all his bear, you know, excitement all like rolling up within him. He's like, giant piece of meat. Can't wait. I didn't have to hunt this one. I didn't have to tear it apart. I just get to eat raw meat. This is my favorite day ever. He goes over to it. And I'm, oh, a bear trap. It totally comes down on his snout or on his paw. And now instead of eating meat, he's in total despair. He didn't get the meat, and he's probably going to die. Traps are like a really bad deal, but they look so enticing. That's the key to a trap. All of these things that we're going to look at, all of us have human tendencies in our heart to get trapped in every single one of these distractions. We just have to identify the trap. We got to be able to identify it and go, you just know that bear, if he was told, hey, anytime you see raw meat just laying around in the woods, it's a trap. Like, don't do it. Like, throw something at it or so. Like, go find a bunny and throw the dead bunny at the thing on the ground in order to set the trap so that you don't wind up pawing the trap. Like, figure out a way to set the trap so that you don't wind up snared in it. We're going to this morning look at a few traps that are pretty normal. I mean, they're so normal in our culture. And I love that Jesus, with prophetic foresight, knew what we would be facing in 2019 and told us what the traps are so that we don't have to wind up putting our paw in that thing. The first, materialism. Man, when I think about this trap, it is all around us. Everyone in our culture is consumed by the cares of this life and trying to keep up with one another. It is so a normal cultural thing to be distracted by blessings and wanting more blessings and doing whatever it takes to get more blessings. And you just, the reason this is a trap is, who doesn't want to be blessed? Who doesn't want nice stuff? But we can't get our minds focused on that as the objective of life. The objective of life is Jesus. He's the one that gives good gifts, and he's got principles about working hard. But we can't find ourselves working towards objectives that actually wind up distracting us from Jesus and detracting from our love for him. Materialism is a trap. The cares of this life, it's a giant distraction. And the problem is, in our culture, the focus on always striving to get more, bigger, better. The constant war in our soul, if I could just get that thing, I'd be happy. No, you aren't. Just like the last time you got the last thing you wanted, here you are again. How many days, weeks, months later, you're in the same boat. You're in the same situation. That won't fix your problem. We want to instead focus on the Lord and then allow him to allot to us all the blessings that he wants and follow his principles. We work hard. This is not an excuse to not work hard. But I'll tell you what. For those of you who are hard workers, I want to warn you double. You be careful that you don't get caught in this trap. Because if you're a hard worker, you've already seen the principle, if I work hard, good stuff happens to me. Therefore, I'll work twice as hard. I'll work three times as hard. And you find yourself in a trap where you have been working so hard to get blessings from God that you've actually stopped connecting with God. You've actually stopped prioritizing Him. Instead of spending that time with Him, instead of having your heart connected, you're now finding yourself consumed with thoughts about your work, thoughts about how do I get that next thing. You're consumed in those ways. There is a way to operate in all the purposes of the Lord for your life and not live in the distraction, but you've got to fight it. I want to tell you these distractions are not one-time victories and you're done. These are lifelong realities. So the truth is, if you were great at dealing with the subject of the trap of materialism a year ago or 5 years ago, it doesn't mean that you're good at it again today. This is one of those things we've got to look at all the time. This is how Jesus said it in Matthew 5:19 through 24. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. You can't make your life about your treasures. And the treasures don't even have to necessarily all be material. It could be position. It could be opportunity. Some people, their treasures are, if I do this and this, it gives me more opportunities. And opportunities aren't bad in themselves. Opportunities are bad if you get distracted by them. Material possessions aren't bad. They're bad if you get distracted by them. There are some people who are totally poor who are more materialistic than those that are super rich. So it's not about how much you have or don't have. It's about how much that thing has your heart. How much does that subject of longing for more own your heart, own your prayer life, own your ambitions, own your interactions, own what you're strategically always trying to accomplish in every situation? That's the subject. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. Where your treasure is, your heart will be. We want for our treasure to be the greatest commandment. We want for all of us, honestly before the Lord, to be able to say, my greatest treasure is to love the Lord my God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. That's what has my heart. No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You can't serve both God and money. And I would even say you can't serve both God and just this engulfing in materialism, because there's other things that you can have that aren't even necessarily money. We want to be careful about this, because if we wind up in the trap of materialism, we can have the whole world and forfeit our soul. We can have it all and yet not really have anything. It's scary because of how much discernment we lack. We look at someone who has it all in this life, and if we're not careful, we envy them. But we don't know where they're at with the Lord. And I'll tell you what, I want to envy people whose hearts are deep in Jesus. I want to look at that one and go, that's what I'm really striving towards. Not having more of this and more of that. You only have so much energy. You only have so many more days in your life. How will you spend them? Do not get trapped by the endless pursuit of more. Work hard, trust God with the results. Don't overexert yourself to the point where it's cutting in on the things that matter most. The first and the greatest commandment. If your business is costing you first and greatest commandment, if your workplace assignment, if your whatever is costing you your first and greatest commandment, you need to seriously reassess where time and energy and stuff is going. I'm not saying cut stuff off. I'm saying reprioritize. Figure out how to navigate that thing differently, because the most important thing, the thing that we're going to mourn the most when we stand before the Lord, isn't the opportunities or the ministry things that we did or didn't do. It's going to be, did I love Him with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength while I was down there and given the opportunity? This is going to be a big one. All right, let's go on to the next trap. The trap of man-pleasing. Ugh, this one's yucky. And it's so human to do this. It's so normal. This isn't the other guy or other gal. It's you. It's me. We're all in this one. We've got to fight this trap. Jesus said over and over in the Sermon on the Mount, I'm just going to give you a few of the examples from Matthew 6:1, 2, 5, 16. We'll get there one at a time. Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. Don't do stuff to get people's attention. Don't make your life, that thing that you were going to do, and it really could have been done for God, don't figure out how to do it for people. Don't do it in light of, I just need to please man. I want that approval from people. He said in 6:2, when you give to the needy, don't announce it with trumpets. That's what the hypocrites do, to be honored by others. They do it to be honored by others. They do it to get the attention of others. They do their acts of righteousness. You were supposed to do acts of righteousness. We're supposed to do lots of them before him to get his attention, his eyeballs gazing at us, not to do those same things to get the attention of people. And when we do it to get the attention of people, here's what happens. Lots of times we get that attention and we get addicted to it. The truth is, we are supposed to be addicted to getting the attention of somebody and to feel the pleasure of somebody. But it's not humans, it's God. And when we divert that deep desire to please, and we put that desire from the Lord, instead we put it on people, we will actually wind up getting praise from people. And we'll be feeling pumped up because you've only got so much in your, you know, feeling the pleasure bucket. And if we're feeling that receiving, you know, pleasure and praise from people, we're probably getting all we need. And therefore, we're not even thinking any longer about the Father's purposes and the Father's pleasure. We got to be careful. He said it over and over. He said, when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites. They love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by others. To me, this, where I'm coming from here, it's not so much about the issue of giving, praying, and fasting in a second. It's about the issue of doing things before the eyes of men to get men's approval, to get their attention. We want the approval of God. We can't live in light of the approval of man. We will be totally distracted because, let me just tell you right now, our culture will praise you if you do 100 wrong things. There are 100 wrong things you could do this afternoon that you would get praise on social media for. And your Father in heaven would look at you and go, what are you doing? If we become dependent on the praise of man, we will wind up feeding the praise of man. And we will take steps we didn't ever think we were going to take. We'll say things we didn't ever think we were going to say. Looking for the praise of man is a distraction from God's purpose. We want the praise of one man, Jesus in heaven. And the way that we get his praise is actually completely opposite than the way we get it from everybody else. Last one that I'll give you is the fasting one. When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show others their fasting. The difference between fasting and trying to keep it secret and fasting to try to get attention is who you're directing the fasting at and who you want to dialogue with about the fasting. Do you want to dialogue with the Lord or do you want to dialogue with people? And if you're trying to dialogue with people, you're going to do certain things in order to be able to get their attention. But again, this could be anything. We want to live before the eyes of God. We do not want to seek the praise of man. And the problem is, it is far too easy because, truthfully, if you live for the Lord, you will receive some praise from man. That's not bad. It's bad to get distracted by it. See, that's the thing with this whole distraction thing is, nothing is wrong in and of itself. Nothing. The problem is getting distracted by it and allowing our heart to now engage with the thing instead of engaging with the Lord that brought us the thing. Sometimes it's going to be the Lord that tells somebody, go praise that person for what they just did. The Lord might be the one. We've got to look up and go, thank you for telling that person to come praise me, or thank you that they did, whether they thought it was you or not, instead of being enticed by that feeling of praise. Instead of feeling that and going, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get more of that tomorrow from that person. I'm going to position myself in a certain way in order to get them to see me. We don't want to do that. It's a distraction. You wind up spending your energy, your life, your attention on rewards that won't matter worth a flip later on. And they're hollow. When we serve the praise of man, it's hollow. The other side of this, if we serve the praise of God, we will actually wind up benefiting and blessing the people around us instead of getting hollow praise from them that winds up being useless for them and actually damaging to us. We want to serve the audience of one. That's a beautiful thought process because our most precious pursuit is the greatest commandment. Love the Lord our God, not try to get attention from people. And when we do, it's pride. It's pride because we want the praise of people. We want humans to tell us how awesome we are. Guys, this we're all in this together. We all have to fight this. I mean, I could preach a message to try to get you to think I'm awesome. Or I could preach a message to try to talk you more into Jesus, and the difference is ever so slight. The message could be the same. You don't know my heart's motives. I mean, all of us are in this boat together. We've got to fight against this distraction because you can wind up wasting your life doing godly stuff because your focus was off. You were doing the godly stuff in order to get praise from people because it helps scratch the itch because life is so difficult. And it just so happens God made himself invisible to our eyes on purpose. He's up there. We don't see him around us all the time. It is a reach of the heart to believe in faith. You see this act of righteousness and you're pleased with it. That's how he wants us to live. We're a people of faith, not a people that are trying to be man-pleasing. We struggle with the fear of man. We want to blend in with public opinion. Sometimes we're unwilling to take a stand for things that are right. Sometimes we just go along with sin. But it's really an issue of man-pleasing. If I say something, everybody's going to get upset with me. If I stand against this tide of darkness, I'm going to have to, they won't like me as much. Just kind of want to go with the flow. Everybody's, you know, saying, this is good, this is right. It's just kind of easiest to just go along with it. But actually what's happening is we're being persuaded out of devotion. I don't want you to be deceived by the enemy's cunning, led astray from your pure and simple devotion to Jesus. I don't want distractions to enter into your mind, into your life, that wind up taking you away from God's purposes for you. Let's talk about the trap of comparison. This one's ugly. You know, part of the problem for me with the subject of comparison, again, all of these, there's nothing wrong with the thing in and of itself. It's what we do with the thing. Part of comparison is how we learn social norms. Okay? Like, just very simply. Somebody walks into this room, and we're in worship, and we're all standing up, and we're singing. People know, okay, that's kind of like the thing to do here, I guess. You walk into a different church, and everybody is seated. They've got their heads down, and they're like in a meditative posture during worship. You walk in, and you're comparing yourself to them. You're going, I guess I need to fall in line here. I don't need to be the guy jumping up and down right now because that's not what's going on here. So comparison is actually part of just social awareness. But we've got to be careful that we don't wind up taking it to the next level. Look at Galatians 6, and then we'll look at a little bit of Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Galatians 6 related to comparison. Man, this one just says it so clear. Galatians 6, 4 through 5. Each one should test their own actions. Then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to someone else. For each one should carry their own load. I loved it, by the way, that your song was on the load that Jesus is going to carry for us. And I knew I was going here with this. How many times could carry your own load even be in the New Testament? I mean, that's like, I mean, most of the times I can think of, it's probably talking about like an ox carrying some stuff in a cart. I just love that this was there, and then Sherry picked that song. It's so great. So in this passage, we see this is Paul to the Galatians. He's saying, I want you to take pride in yourself alone. Don't compare yourself to others. Instead, test your own actions and don't compare yourself to someone else's actions. This is the trap. Here's what happens. We are so used to comparing ourselves to the other person. How smart are they? I want to be smarter. How smart are they? I'm not that smart. So in one case, we feel judged because we're not as smart as them. In the other case, we feel pride because we're smarter than them. But then to the next person, it's funny. Are they funnier than me? I'm funnier than them. Are they richer than me? I'm richer than them. Traps everywhere. God made them the way God made them. God made you the way God made you. You be you. You do you. Each one should test their own actions. Take pride in yourself. Take pride in who God made you, what you're doing for Jesus, who you are, the way he created you. Take pride in yourself without comparing yourself to someone else. When we do this, and guys, we all do this, it's a trap. Because now instead of trying to love God, we're trying to be like them or be better than them. That's totally dumb. What a massive win for the enemy. Like, what a way to totally get us off course. We're supposed to be a people all about loving God with all our hearts and mind and strength, but instead we're distracted by they're smarter than me. They're more handsome. They've got more of this. I therefore need to make my life's objective to get better, smarter, cooler, more money-er than them. That's my objective. And again, the opposite is just as bad. I have more money than them. I am cooler than them. It's pride. It's pride and despair. This is not the kingdom of God, and we're all subject to this trap because we constantly want to see what's happening with the other person and then compare ourselves to them. Guys, we have got to learn some boundaries on this one. We have got to see, we got to identify it and go, this is how God deals with them. That is so awesome. And that's the end of the conversation. Not therefore I need to be that awesome. Not therefore I need to... We need to be able to start to celebrate each other's graces and strengths without comparing ourselves and then trying to keep up with one another. Comparison will destroy us. Jesus said it like this in Matthew 6 and Matthew 7. He said, don't be like the hypocrites. He was talking about the Pharisees, the ones that had the most. They were the most well-known in the country. They were the most educated. They were the most, he's talking about the Pharisees, and he's calling them hypocrites. They had everything. They had the money. They had the prestige. They had the honor. They dressed well. They were respected. They had everything. He's like, yeah, totally don't even be like them. You're not trying to be like them. Be like you. Then on the flip side, Matthew 7:1, he says, do not judge. So in Matthew 6, he's saying, don't long for the guy that's got everything. In Matthew 7, he's saying, don't judge the one that has less than you. In character, in money, in honor, in understanding, whatever it is. These are two sides of the trap of comparison. And if we're not careful, we live there. And what it winds up doing is taking away brain cycles you could have been using on the Lord. Taking away the joy in your heart because just, can I just identify a giant lie? Your life should be worse today because you heard your friend got a raise. That's dumb. Your life should be worse today because you discovered this person is more popular than you. Your life should be worse today because? But when we hear others being promoted, we see other things happening in other people's lives, if we're not careful, we have a bad day because of their victory. That's ridiculous. It's because we're comparing ourselves to them. That's not me. I'm me. I'm supposed to be comparing myself to the call of my on my life. I'm supposed to be comparing myself to, God, I want to love you more. I want to love you more today than I did yesterday. I want to pursue you. We're not supposed to be comparing each other to each other. It's a trap because God made you smart and them funny and they're dumb and you're not funny. And God did it that way. And we're like, oh, I just thought I was funny. And the other one's like, oh, I just thought I was smart. This is ridiculous. God scattered his gifts abroad. He scattered them. He made us different. We're not supposed to live in the trap of comparison. And when we do, we wind up distracted from our purpose. And it's so easy to happen over and over and over, and especially if you have social media. It's so easy. I just got back from this pastor's retreat, and it was funny to hear how many of them were talking about, I had to stop following so many of the other churches that I was used to following on social media because I was so tired of seeing their success and judging myself according to how great things were going over there and how things weren't happening that way for me. I just couldn't handle it anymore. It's probably not a bad idea if we're in that position. Like, we can't keep comparing ourselves. It's destructive, and it accomplishes nothing good, ever. But it accomplishes lots bad immediately. You're distracted, you're sad, they're smarter, they're cooler, they're fine. It's... God made you the way he made you. He made no mistake. Be you and mature in all that God has for you. What we do want to do is we want to look at the areas in other people's lives that we also hear the Lord speaking to us. That's a good example of what you can continue to do to take steps in your life in that direction. But don't compare yourself to them. Instead, learn from them. You know what I try to do when I hear a good teacher is not get jealous, but I have to fight that. When I hear a good teacher, I want to go, yeah, dang. Stealing that, oh, they're going to hear that next Sunday. I'm like, I'm trying to glean. I want to learn. I want to get better, but I don't want to compare myself and be like, oh, just, you know, this and they're so big and great. We can't live there. It's a total distraction. Last one I want to look at is the trap of selfishness. We are so selfish by nature. It's so scary. Like, our motives by nature, unless we catch them, our motives are self-interested. Our motives are how to make my life better, how to get more out of life, how to be happier, how to guard very closely the people I care about the most. And there's nothing wrong with those desires so long as they don't become a distraction, but they often become a distraction. Because what we typically do is we go beyond, I want to do the best that I can to have a good life, have a good, you know, this, have a good that, and go, even if it means I have to cheat the other guy to get there. Even if it means I'm not giving myself in this situation. I want what I want. I want to look after my own self-interests, even if it means I'm not going to give that person, I'm not going to help that person, I'm going to actually step on that person in order to get what I want. Selfishness is a distraction that's pretty dangerous. And it's so normal. This isn't like some of you may struggle with this. All of you are selfish like me. And we got to deal with selfishness. We've got to address the fact that we are constantly being distracted by the focus of selfishness. Matthew 5, 43 through 47, Jesus told us, look, this is really the way of the kingdom. Love people. Love other people. Love other people. The only way you can love other people is give them stuff. Time, money, attention, a hug, a smile, an encouraging note, an exhortation, consideration, pray for them. You got to give. The only way you can love is give. You got to give. But you can give a million ways, so it's not like there's only three ways to give. But love equals give, okay? You have got to give in order to express love. And this is what Jesus said. You've heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. I tell you, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Or not even the tax collector is doing that. And if you greet only your own people, he calls love greeting. He says even greeting people is an expression of love. If you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the pagans do that? We're supposed to love people, but the problem is we're so self-interested. I've only got so much. I really want to guard my time. I really want to guard this. We have to have those boundaries, but our pendulum is swung way too far on self-interested right now. I mean, that is our default. We are way too self-focused, self-protecting, self-indulged, selfish. We've got to deal with that distraction because Jesus said the way of the kingdom is give. The way of the kingdom is love. The way of the kingdom is pour out. But our natural tendency is to withhold. The kingdom of God is like a river flowing. We've talked about this in the past weeks. When you stop up that river, you stop up the kingdom of God flowing through you. It's love, it's giving. But that's the way that we actually build the kingdom. It's the way that we experience fullness. It's the way that we get to love God even in our human interactions. So we can actually do the greatest commandment, love God with all, as we're interacting with one another, if I'm thinking about your interests instead of mine. But our default is to think about our own interests. It winds up getting us in trouble. Jesus, Matthew 7, 12, he said the whole point of the law, you want to know why we have the whole Bible? He said, here's the point of it. So in everything, Jesus is giving a so statement. He's just done the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and he's halfway through chapter 7. He's giving the Sermon on the Mount. He's like, okay, you want to get it? You want to understand what life is? In everything, do to other human beings what you would want them to do to you. This sums it all up. You want to know how your life and interactions ought to go? This sums it all up. Treat other people, do, give, express, give to others what you would want give and done and express to you. Do to others. He said, this is the whole purpose of the way that we walk out love in life. But selfish ambition is so wrapped up in our hearts that it keeps us from the purposes of the Lord. And I just want to identify that. The Holy Spirit nudges us sometimes. Go do this. And I want you to think about whatever the this is as giving every time. Money is one of 100 ways to give. One. There's 99 more. The Holy Spirit says, I want you to go give something to somebody. Whatever our reason is for not doing it, it actually winds up coming back to our own self-interest. I'm tired, I don't want to. I'm afraid if I say that, I'll look stupid. I don't really like that person. It's always I. Selfish ambition. Look what Paul says about this. That's James. James 3:16. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. Oh, terrifying. There's consequences to this selfish thing. But I just want you to think for a moment, the moments in your life that have been the sweetest, it was because somebody gave you something. The father, he gave you something. Your friend, your mom, a neighbor. Somebody gave you something, and that's the reason it was the sweetest moment. You're like, this was so awesome. Why? Because I got this thing from somebody, whether it was physical or you know, just encouragement. We were given. We've got to then go and do the exact same. We have got to be those that give. But the selfishness causes us to not, and it winds up being a distraction because we think we're doing the smart play. We're protecting ourselves. We think we're taking care of what matters the most. Number one, take care of number one. And in doing so, we stop up the purposes of the kingdom of God. We wind up distracted from the purposes. And even you find disorder and every evil practice. Selfishness breeds every manner of evil. Every time there's selfishness, an unwillingness to invest and to help and to bless others, every time there is that, we wind up in a whole slew of other sins. That's what James says, and you can think in your own life, because of that selfishness, then I also had to be more selfish with them the next time. Because of that selfishness, it was awkward in my interaction with them the next time. Because of that selfishness, it actually led me down this path. It's a distraction. I want to just encourage you, look for the other distractions in your life. Look for the things that the Lord is wanting to highlight in you that are not just blatant sins, but they're a distraction from his purpose. And again, his purpose is the first and greatest commandment, to love him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.